welcome to the Orange County Low Riders Advisory Council meeting. It is 6:37, and I'm going to call the meeting to order. First up is a public comment period. Do we have any more public comment that we should speak and address at this time? One, sure.
One.
And you may want to turn the mic on.
And I have some concerns about the development of Rhode Island Avenue Station. I brought this up on several occasions, and I may have read this down. But there's a parking garage that's between Rhode Island Avenue and the bus space where the buses come in. And it appears that it's going to come right into where the buses are supposed to be coming into Lodge. This affects not only DC buses, but also the Dallas 80 line. And this is a very small area. Every bus that comes into that station has to go through there. And having cars going across back and forth, the buses have to go in, just isn't going to work. It's not a good for the whole island. It's not good for us. Also, I found out from many in Hyattsville that the planners don't even know about this parking garage. Also, there's a green sign up there that points to cars that are inactive. And doing so, I'm not sure if it's for people or for cars, but we had an incident on the DAF, December 31st, it was in the afternoon. And a little car came down the bus ramp as the bus was coming in. Unfortunately, our bus driver was very patient and waited for the person to back their car up and get in the right lane. And a few days later, I discovered the sign. I talked to the Fifth District Committee about this, and I've been down to VDOT, talked to people. They were supposed to come in and remove the sign, and they haven't done it yet. I had some concerns about this when I brought it up in Hyattsville. But I really wonder if the Riders Advisory Council ever gets involved in this development that goes on at these metro stations to make sure that it is bus-friendly, transit-friendly. It seems like they're geared to the people that are going to be living there rather than those of us that have to go in and out on the buses. And actually, the people on the train, because a lot of people that ride the train come in on the bus, so.
Thank you, Inspector. Thanks for your comments. I have one question for you, though. This parking garage that you mentioned, is this a Lamada parking garage?
No.
This is a private parking garage. Okay, so it seems like this is something between the city, or maybe this is all within DC, correct?
Yeah.
So this is, okay, this could be a DC government Lamada collaboration opportunity or better. Opportunity for better collaboration.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else from the public today speak? Okay, so let's move on to the third agenda item, which is approval of agenda. Does anyone have any comments on the agenda? None? Great. Approval of class meeting minutes. I guess we can take discussion if you have any edits for John, but I don't think we have enough members present at this time to vote.
Too short.
Too short, okay.
Two people short, sorry.
We still have, well, I guess we might as well delay the discussion then until we have enough members to vote. If we have enough time near the end of the meeting, someone please remind me if I can remember to maybe come back to this agenda item. So we're going to go straight into our fifth agenda item, which is the presentation by Metro Board Member to discuss Metro strategic plan. And she's here. Welcome.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be back. I was here about a year ago talking about governance with the RAC. Give you a little setup for this. One of the things that the board is engaged in is setting a new strategic plan for the agency. We're doing a lot of other things too. We're working on a multi-year budget and a multi-year business plan. All these things come together to begin to give us a framework to talk to the community about what needs to happen to ensure that Metro stays viable and strong for the future. So as one of our major advisor groups, I'm here tonight to tell you, walk you through a little bit of this. I'm not going to do a whole PowerPoint, I'm just going to present that you, is your homework. And I want to just focus in on the places that I really would appreciate your feedback. Andrew Burnside is here, and she's taking notes for me so that they can go back and be shared. So whatever you guys could say will be shared with the full Metro Board. We've kind of been fanning out and talking to all kinds of people in the region, stakeholders at this point. We do plan to do outreach to individuals probably after, April, May, June, in that timeframe, and we'll definitely get you guys the information on that so you can know ways that individuals can play a role. But for now, what we're trying to do is get your feedback. So we're going to skip to chapter 6 of your presentation, and John's got it up here on the screen. Metro has long had a mission statement, and it has had a vision statement. And so the first body of work we did, the first piece of work we did, was to update the mission and vision statements. So what I'm looking for is your feedback on, do you think this captures it? If you don't, what words bother you? That whole kind of thing. You need the vision and mission to set the context in which you put that in your goals. So the mission that we're proposing says, Metro leads the region forward by providing safe, equitable, reliable, and cost-effective public transit. And our vision is that our future rides with Metro. So I'm curious, your reactions and any takes that you all have. Okay, you call me or why?
Well, I usually call you, but again, I ask that you all put your name tag up in your comments. Do you want feedback as you go through the question?
Yes, I absolutely do. I'd rather point out the feedback.
I think this is great. One of the things that's strikingly absent from all of this is increased ridership. I'm surprised that one of the goals isn't to get more people to ride the system. And I wonder if that's just an oversight or if it's because the board sees that the system is so overtaxed as it is that it can't handle more ridership.
Well, that's interesting. And I'm not to the goals yet. So, are you suggesting then that in the mission or the vision statement, it should talk about increasing ridership?
I don't think so, yeah. I mean, safe, equitable, reliable, cost-effective, those are all great. I think those are all wonderful missions, but it should also be about getting more people on the public transit also.
Being a national option, but that's going to happen. Okay. I did on the vision. This seems good, though. This is that vision statement is more sort of a spoken than like the vision statement's being, where usually a vision statement is sort of talking about like what the world you like, if whatever product you have does, whatever it is, you know. So kind of maybe talking to those. And I'm just saying, I wonder if being a vision could be something like, you know, there's, you know, a standard option for, you know, everyone in the region, or, you know, that people are able, you know, no matter where they are, all jurisdictions, all, you know, income levels and so on, you know, are able to take advantage of transit options that are convenient and, you know, those other things that are in the mission. Sort of talking about, I think a vision is sort of like, yeah, if we had everything we wanted, like, what would this transit role be in the world?
You know, I think reflecting back a little on some of our conversations, there's no question that the board believes that our region can only be vibrant and successful if public transit works across the spectrum. And I think that when we chose the word future, that was what was in our mind, but it may well be that it's too subtle.
I think we want to focus on the vision.
I forgot my vision being longer even than the mission.
No,
you
actually
so.
Were told seven words or less on the visions.
Okay. A few comments. I'm going to read the numbers.
I think that, something about Metro being an alternative to other transportation, Metro, I think, as much as any system in this country, is not an alternative for people, it's a requirement for them. They want to know who has cars, I would suspect the majority of folks on this council do not support that union. So I think saying it's an alternative form of transportation would be like having a second car in the garage, so you don't have to go rent the truck or what have you. Is a primary form of transportation, and it's a reason why people move here, because they can use it as a primary. So I think something should be said to property. As to the future rest of Metro, I think my concern on that is that, you know, regardless of what happens, that vision is going to come true, right? The future is going to happen, and Metro will be here, and will be on the train, so to speak. I think that something a little more qualified, or maybe, should be the deal, because something is changing. The future is going to happen, whether we like it or not. It will be a bad future, or it will be a status quo future, or it will be a good future, depending on money levels, or resources, all that stuff. But I think when, from my perspective at least, I think something that is, aspires to better, would be great.
I have a comment about the vision statement as well. There's something about the vision statement that doesn't fit well with me, and I'm thinking it's because I read it as if I was a Lamada board member or employee, and it says, or staff member, and it says, our future rides with Metro. And so it just seems to be heavily dependent only on Metro and not inclusive of what else is going on in the DC area of transit and transportation. So I don't have an idea just yet for suggestions, but our future rides with Metro doesn't resonate really well with people's vision.
Yeah, one statement that was made that I think I like is it's not just an alternate form of transportation, but I like the idea of it being a primary source of transportation. That in the vision statement that you want Metro to be someone's first choice, but not just an alternative to use. That they would choose to leave their car in the driveway because the transportation is easy, efficient, and gets them to where they want to go. So I like that. I think that's a nice positive, way to put it. And I think it's worth striving for.
We need someone here that captures that everybody. That seems to be quite a consensus. Okay. Well, it is. I tell you, the set words is hard. We felt pretty good. We have to respond. So, if there are any more questions on that, then let's look first.
One other thought. It's so easy to parse five words. I think the future doesn't arrive with Metro. The future is Metro. If Metro fails, I mean, not to be overly dramatic, but if Metro wasn't here, the city would fail. The city would not be able to function. The future of the city, the development, the economic growth is happening because Metro is here. A lot of that job creation investment and those happen because Metro Transit is a region. I think that's something we can consider as well. We are not along for the ride. We are the ride. I guess we would want to be.
Okay, so if you look at the the left side, the operational goals, should look pretty familiar to you. These are the ones that Mr. Charles put in place when he came, and they have the KPIs are attached to them, and so they're the ways that the board has been measuring his work and his progress. And we don't anticipate those going away. We think that the organization still has to be incredibly focused on those in the day-to-day and how we spend our money, et cetera. The board's strategic goals are the beginning of the framework for the strategic plan. So you have a mission and a vision statement, and then you have goals that you think are necessary to achieve that mission and vision, right? And generally, you don't have a whole lot of them because they should be big, and you should be able but you should also be able to focus. It shouldn't encompass everything you do in the agency. So we've chosen three at the moment. These are very draft. We've had one or two conversations, but we didn't want to go out with no goals to show you kind of what we were thinking. So the three strategic goals are to improve mobility in the region, to support the development of complete communities, and I'll come back to that in a sec, and then ensure financial sustainability. Complete communities is an idea that comes from the Region Forward Compact, which was done by the Council of Governments. It has been signed on to by every government in the region, so I think it's 23, 24 signatories, and it is an integrated look at how things that have to happen in our region to assure that our region is sustainable. Transportation is a big thread in there, and they have something that they called regional activity centers, which looked at jobs and transportation. Complete Communities tries to look at jobs, houses, housing, transportation, access to healthcare, good schools, tries to put a much bigger set of ideas on the table at once to say, for places to work for people, you have to look at more than jobs and transportation. You have to look at all of this stuff. So what we're saying, one of the ideas here is to say, Metro needs to be paying attention to this idea of complete communities, because the choices we make about where buses run, about whether we support streetcars or other forms of transit in, or approach them in planning, have the possibility of influencing where these complete communities are actually achieved or not. Just as when I, as an Arlington board member, or somebody else who's on council makes a decision about locating a new development, we try to take into account how are people going to come and go from there, what are their options going to be. So we want to set that up to be more connected than it's been in the past. So so those are the strategic goals.
Carl Lubin and Pat.
I would suggest improve and expand mobility in the region. Improving sounds like and making the carpet nicer and this old carpet expanding sounds like you're improving service and reaching more people from kind of active ends. Ridership is important in ridership. One of the goals I think political professional strategic 400 should always be to improve ridership and bring more people into the system.
Yeah, same point again, basically. I picture looking at these operational strategic goals, I see a fabulous metro service that's glistening clean, where all of the all of the employees are wonderful and do their jobs, and they're the best and the brightest. They, metro's image is fantastic, but nobody's riding the train. So I think either, I don't know if that's an operational goal or a strategic goal, but to enhance ridership, enhance use of the system should be in there somewhere. And I think it also speaks to the proposed budget that we're looking at now. I mean, we're looking at this menu of options, and it's cost versus ridership, and it looks like pretty much every area Metro is willing to sacrifice ridership for some of these options that are already there. And I think if ridership was one of the strategic goals, then maybe that trade-off would not be as clear as it seems to be right now.
One of the concepts that I'm not familiar with, but I think I'm interested in pursuing, is the idea of complete communities. And I'm wondering, I know it's not mentioned here, but I'm wondering, I am familiar a little bit more with complete streets. And it would be kind of interesting to see where the complete street concept, because of, I suppose, the national groups that I'm involved with, can integrate into the complete communities where you might have overlap and synergy and all that sort of thing. So I guess that will just be a footnote, because I think probably complete streets has some very specific recommendations. How do they fit in with complete communities?
There's a regional coalition of folks, elected people with nonprofits and others, who are working on developing the complete communities idea, and the Complete Streets Coalition is part of that.
Part of that, okay.
And so we're learning from them as we go. All communities won't be the same, because everybody doesn't have access to the same thing, so we're kind of thinking there's going to be tiers of complete communities, depending on, you know, where they're located and what's available.
Yeah.
So
it's
a good analogy.
Right, certainly the two have a lot in common.
Yeah.
Thanks. Ron and Victoria? Yes, I realize under operational goals that you kind of have this constant tension about general goals and getting too specific and where you put your specific things. But, and this could go under the quality or enhanced mentors image, but one of the things we talk about constantly in this group, probably as much as anything, is kind of courteous, helpful attendance at the particularly the metro stations, but I'm sure it's also the bus drivers and everyone else. And it just seems like under operational goals, you have to make some acknowledgement if you want a well-trained, courteous staff. And the reason I particularly think that needs to go in there is that's probably of all the things you can put in there has the least budget implication. I realize the budget is a constant problem for many of these things, but for a well-trained, courteous staff, it's not. This seems you really need that in our operational goal somewhere.
Thanks, that's a great suggestion, and actually there are several of us on the board who don't like that this is characterized as the image, because we really think it is about customer service and customer interaction and this issue of training people well. So I, you know, the next iteration of this, I think, in fact, you may see some different words for this goal. But we get it.
Thank you.
Four things. Former comments, Victoria, Debbie, Carl, Joseph.
I had a comment about the operational goal for being a safer organization. I'd like to see something there about creating and maintaining it, because right now we're seeing the results, you know, lack of physical maintenance over the years. So we definitely need to emphasize that we will maintain things.
You know, this one is focused a lot on the organization of Metro as opposed to the physical structure. So it has to do with the roadway protection program and some of those things, you know, where we were having people killed and other things were happening. I just want to make sure that that's the one we mean to say as opposed to the physical infrastructure, which is more in the deliver problem service piece. I mean, both. I just want to be sure.
I was looking at the Create a Safer Organization.
Okay. And Debbie?
Is that something for different development? I was thinking, because people keep it going in, come down to Metro, for business, for leisure, for education, for employment. Now, how about adding it?
Two comments. I agree with Victoria on the structure piece. I think that's something that doesn't only come through the being delivery quality service. My suggest maintain and expand rather than deliver. But again, with that service piece, it recognizes the physical infrastructure. And, that doesn't only come out. Physical infrastructure is my greatest asset. I'm sure you guys believe your employees are your greatest asset, like John. From monetary standpoint. Within the strategic goals, I think that there must be something about supporting economic and job centers and commerce.
Well, that's the company community's idea. How is that?
I guess my sense is that very few people know what communities are. So if you show this to any lay person, you'd say, I have no idea what that means. Does that mean sidewalks outside on all the streets? Does that mean, I guess.
So you're thinking like economically vital areas or job?
I mean, I just think that Metro supports so much more than people living here. It supports religious organizations and people's, trips that are faith-based communities. It supports job growth. You just see it supports economic development. And it supports leaders in the government, nonprofits and all this. I think there should be stronger recognition of that fact that so much relies upon Metro and the success of those pieces is often aligned probably too closely with the success of Metro.
Okay, Joseph,
and then
we have about 15 minutes for
live.
We're doing
very fast. I'm getting everything in
there. Well, maybe I should ask you this question. Are we going to go through the rest of this and take questions on fire, or?
Well, yeah, just my purpose here tonight is actually to get feedback on the mission, the vision, and the goals. That's what I'm here for. We can run through those slides, and I can tell you a little bit about them. A lot of it is a kind of a summary of the work that the board has been engaged in, which I hope appropriately assume that you all know because you come every month and you've been paying attention. A lot of the people who are stakeholders only pay attention to us when there's something bad in the newspaper. And so this was an attempt to put things together for them so that they would see that if you really have been making progress.
Well, I guess that's my point today. On the subject you were just talking about, because I don't think that they should pay attention when something bad happens because that's the only time they pay attention. That's really the only time that you're engaged in. When something bad happens, or something bad about that. Like there are increases, service cuts, and things like that. So, I guess when it comes to goals, is that my concern is that there seems to be no mention of engaging these stakeholders more in a strategic involvement in growing Metro and making Metro better. I guess that to me that comes with how Metro views its stakeholders. Because when you talk to and when you listen to people from Metro, they refer to them as customers. And a customer is a lot different than a stakeholder.
Yes.
And a customer is, we're going to create this, and if they like it, they'll keep using it, and things like that. We're more than customers. I would like to help or encourage the board to change that conversation from a board perspective, because I know that at least on the general manager side, that may be a little bit different because they're trying to serve the people, but at least from the board perspective, seeing the community as not customers, but as stakeholders, and seeing engagement as a more strategic involvement in Metro.
That's a lovely comment and very useful. I do think we want to figure out how to do that more regularly. And as you know, most of us are new, so we're open to suggestions about how we should do that.
And just real fast, to that end, you know, Metro operates in a very close partnership with the federal government, with all other regional transit agencies. And I think that partnership is unique. It operates, amongst the three main jurisdictions, DC, Virginia, Maryland, plus the counties and the cities. And I think that, I don't think it would be out of place to recognize that partnership as well, because they are also partners as well. They're, having the board is made up of folks from all over. It would be important to, if Fairfax County were working us out contributing to Metro or what have you, I mean, that doesn't help anyone. So, just as, that all those jurisdictions depend on the success of Metro on their own economic and well-being, it feels a little bit slow.
No, we have been talking to those folks, to all those people, much more than I think we used to.
So, we have two more members that want to comment, but please, at any time, if you want to move on to another slide, or you want to.
We're doing very close.
Okay. Victoria, I think, and then Ben.
Oh, no, I'm on the.
You pointed out, Philip, that you, or some members of the board, were uncomfortable with that maintain and enhance Metro's image. And thinking about it more, it really is the only operational goal here that doesn't go back to the mission. You know, the others are all in support of what you're saying in the mission statement. But that maintain and enhance Metro's image, I guess the question is, what's the point of that? Is it an end in itself? It doesn't seem to be, and it seems like you can incorporate that into the other operational goals, again, talking about customer service and all of that, that would have the effect of maintaining and enhancing Metro's image without just saying it up front as an operational goal.
I think you're right. I think it got written because when Mr. Charles came, it was a really tough time, and the media was really terrible. And he has put, as you all know, a tremendous amount of focus and effort into improving the way that information is made available on the stations and the whole tweeting and all of that sort of stuff is really been about saying, hey, we're not ignoring people, we're here, we're listening. But I totally agree with you that what we should be measuring is how well are we communicating with people and how well do they understand what we're doing. So, totally.
Any other comments?
Yeah, I just think that Metro does have an image problem if the first four goals are successful. I mean, their success fixes the image problem, quote unquote. It doesn't fix the physical infrastructure image problem, but like we said, that would be that part of the quality service or something similar. So, yeah, I agree. Those seem to be, it does stand out as something that would seem to be solved.
I'm not sure that I know that the Metro culture is the kind that they have maintained the escalator, it's something that you're working still together. Maybe you want to pay a physical work like to post it. Let the right along what the Metro is on. Maybe you can find a way to ask a guy if he's not going to call you down. Ask a guy to put something in the picture of him so he can see the talk.
Well, we have been, they've been doing more and more of that using YouTube too, those little educational videos that tell people, what does it mean? Why is your track shut down? So, people have additional ideas. Okay, from all that, that Barbara Richardson and her department will be delighted to hear those things because we're trying to figure out how to get those messages to as many people as possible.
I just want to reiterate a point that Joseph made earlier, and I think it's really important the board consider adding a goal that talks about that two-way communication. I think it's really important for the public to know that they can engage and that they should engage with not just from our staff through the customer service form online, but through their bus operator or train operator, but then they can go to their board representative. And I think that if the board takes the first step of publicizing or showing the public, this is a priority for us to hear from you, so we are taking your thoughts and suggestions into consideration, I think this is a place to have it.
Any other comments?
My only other comment is that when we do the advertising, this is one technique that I've had for a long time, is that we go all through, online services. And there are a lot of people that do not have access, and they get no information whatsoever. We cannot forget those people, because they are also part of the information. So, if there's, we don't have to go high tech, we can go low tech, but, even it wouldn't be that expensive either, but we have to try to figure out something to approach the elderly, the disabled, the foreigners, that don't speak the English well or whatever. So we have, those are people that get no kind of information sometimes. So let's not forget about that.
Right. One of the things I would say is, that's a really important observation, and we do try to do things on buses so that people who are riding can check out stuff. But each jurisdiction is a little different too, and that might be something you all want to talk about with your board counterparts. If you have ideas about how the messages should be pushed to certain communities or made available in some different formats. Because you know your community and you know the places, that might be helpful. There's a rec center, which is the gathering place for a community. And putting information there gets it out faster than any other thing that you might do. The people who know that are the people on the street and the people that you want to recommend to. So I encourage you to think more about that.
Actually, we have one comment. I wanted to let it, was it delicious or what?
One thing I was just going to throw out to this group is I know that within the AAC, there's a lot of disability issues and we kind of focus on those. But a group that, if you wanted to talk about low income and recommendations that really focuses on this, is the Access for All Committee. They do a very good job. They come up with some excellent recommendations. So if that's something that the WAC wants to focus on, I'm certainly asking if they've got expertise in that area, and I think it works well to coordinate activities with a group and look at their recommendations and maybe back and endorse some of their recommendations for communities for low income and individuals that have not very good English proficiency.
So two more comments, David and Debbie, and then we're all actually out of time. Okay, so David and
Debbie. I actually had a question that was about, not just about the goals, but about the rest of the strategic plan, but since we seem to be not going to the rest of the presentation. So my question is, basically, when there was some point that I was being interviewed by someone for TV about the fair hike a while ago, and I was talking to the cameraman after, and he said, so will this fair hike sort of make things better? Right now, and I said, it's not like that they're going to directly use the money to do something that's going to make things better, but they're fixing all of these things, and then in the future everything will be more fixed, things will work better, maybe we won't have to have as large fair hikes in the future. And said, okay, so we'll have a couple of years that'll be kind of bad and then they'll be okay. And I said, well, I think so. And then I was thinking about it a little bit, and I was thinking, we haven't really ever talked about what will 2020 look like? What will 2045 look like? Every year now, for several years, there's a budget gap. And I know you're doing this multi-year budgeting, and I was sort of curious if how far out this is going to go, because people have been asking, and I would like to be able to answer them, when we kind of get to a steady state where the jurisdictional increases will have to increase by X percent a year, and the fares will have to go by X percent a year. But
you know, assuming that sort of, and we know what the pension obligations are going to be, you know, because regardless of people, we know what the pensions are going to be. You know, we should be able to project healthcare costs. I mean, there's lots of people that do that. So shouldn't we be able to kind of have like a graph of sort of each type of cost out for 100 years, you know, so that you can say, in the long run, you know, a steady state will be, and also for repair, right? Once the escalators all get fixed, you know, they'll break down.
What's that cycle?
You know, and we'll have to do it. Is that something that's going to be in the strategic plan? Is that something that the board is working on? If not, you know, how can we help? What do you think about that?
That's perhaps one of the most important questions, is what will it look like? You know, when do we get to this steady state? We have in Arlington now, we call it catch-up and keep-up. So we're in the catch-up phase right now, and that's not the red stuff you put on the hamburger, but you're going to catch up. So when you're in the catch-up phase, you're putting in a lot of money with the expectation that you will reach the steady state. The attempt here by the board is to marry up the strategic vision about where we need to get, and it's about a six-year vision typically, with a budget and a business plan that are designed to get us there. So I can't answer the question for you today whether in 6 years we'll be totally at a steady state everywhere. We've been asking for some ways to begin to talk with people about whether we've achieved it someplace, and we suggested maybe looking at the red line, because the red line has had more work than everybody else. So if we looked at the red line and we thought about the red line, at what point could we think maybe we're at a steady state on the red line? And they're noodling on how they can get us done and what it would look like. But it's absolutely the right question, because right now what we have, with the vision that we have, and the budget that we're able to, you know, even with the gap that we're looking to afford, doesn't expand service. And we all know that everything's getting more crowded, that more people are going to move into this region, that we're, you know, we are a magnet in the country. And so we have to get to a place where we can start planning for how we grow. And one of the things we talk a lot about in these strategic conversations is, does Metro provide it all? Or is Metro the catalyst and the encourager? And I'll give you my favorite example. You know, if we were able to get dedicated bus rapid transit lanes in the region, it wouldn't matter whose buses ran on, right? Private bus service, you know, my local bus service, Metro bus, everybody who was doing bus service could use that. And all of a sudden, you maybe open up an arena for moving more people through other businesses that we don't have right now. Because right now, it's not, except if you're coming from around the county, it's not a productive business to go into. But Metro, because it's regional, because it has all these connections and stakeholders, it's maybe the best place for the best agency to be advocating for that. Because we actually deliver it, and people who we're talking to actually are paying for it. And if we can say, you guys would do this, here's what we think will happen, and it might save you money, or it might let us invest it differently to move even more people, we can have a very different conversation. So, that's what we're trying to tee up. This is the first, this is the beginning. This is the, okay, stake in the ground. Here's what we think needs to happen. Now, we're going to need everybody's help to advocate that. If you've been watching what's happening in Richmond, you know, they're just moving the deck chairs around, and there's not enough chairs on the deck anymore. So until we can get Virginia to say transit's really important, we are a little stuck. But we have some opportunities coming if we can lay this out for them to check up on us with ourselves. So it is all these things build up to get us to a place where we can advocate better, where our voices can all be joined, and it's not just the 14 or 16 of us sitting at the table, but it's all the hundreds and thousands of you standing behind us saying, hey, this really does matter. And yes, we want to put more money into it in order to be successful. Our region, which is funding everything else, is going to be strangled if we don't do it. So that's what we're on.
Okay, one last comment, Debbie.
Maybe we'll all hope to try, but have you thought about putting a book as the asthma, so I can send a bill for what you can try?
I have no idea.
That's a lot of people.
Sure, thank you. I have no idea whether they thought about that. I don't know how sensitive it would be.
Four times, thank you so much for coming to speak with us.
Thank you.
I hope the information we provided was useful.
Absolutely, I always get good comments, and let me just say one other thing. If you go home and you think of new words or different words or have another idea, let me give you my email. It's mhines@arlingtonva.us. Just shoot me an email, and then I can share with them here, or we can let John know too, I suppose, right, John?
Mm-hmm.
Copy, John.
Yeah, my email.
But we really, this is a really great conversation, and I thank you very much for being so generous with your time and your ideas. Thanks a lot.
So before we go on to the next agenda item, which is public hearing and the budget committee report, I'm actually going to ask that we have enough members and not have a forum. So I'm going to ask that we go back to agenda item four, which is approval of tax fee minutes. John, do you have that number?
We do, we have 13 people here.
Okay, so do we have that discussion and approval of each?
You can move them.
Can we do them all at once?
On block?
I move approval of the meeting minutes on block.
Okay. Oh, any, yes.
I believe I was present for the February meeting.
Okay, thank you. I think I missed some people. I added Deborah in, but I think Chris, and I don't know how I missed you, I'm sorry. I'll change that.
Any other comments for the three meetings? Hearing none, I guess I can call a vote. Those that are in favor of passing the meeting minutes for November 2011, January 2012, and February 2012, please raise your hand.
Is there anybody opposed or?
Did anyone oppose or any objections? No.
Thank you.
Okay. So now we will move on to the FY 2013 public hearing recap discussion. And I want to first thank all of you that sent recap out along with John. I know Ben sent a recap out and I think someone else did. So I want to thank you. That was really useful for me. I had a couple of issues in the evening where there were three hearings that I actually was not able to make, but I was able to stay in the loop because of the recap that you all sent around. So I guess, is there anything particular that those of you that were able to attend that you want to highlight and bring to our attention? Ben?
Well, it was clear that the access committee was extremely organized and sent its people out with very clear messages for everyone, and I think they were extremely effective in how they approached everything. So I think if there's one message that comes out of all of this is that their concerns cannot and should not be ignored.
I think there were a lot of good comments that came out from the access committee. One thing that I think was very effective, and I think Brad has done this in the past also, is there was a clear set of talking points, maybe about four or five of that folks should focus on. I know that in Hinesville, I was extremely impressed. We had about 35 candidates, and 30 of those 35 talked on metro access issues. So they got quite the drumbeat. So I think that was extremely effective. One of the things that I thought was most effective was the way individuals would, we had our technical talking points about budget and the amount of money that we should pay and the various plans we had and all that sort of thing. But I thought that was most effective with the individuals that came up and they gave their own personal testimony that supported it more than heartfelt testimony and really made an impression on the board. And I think one of the things, because I know metro access is part of the charter for this group, I think that it's going to be important accounts for this group, because I know my group wants to get a hold of a memo that's coming from the general manager to the board with recommendations on the metro access system and what they want to do, because there was a lot of confusion, particularly in the operations subcommittee, finance subcommittee, on that following Thursday, about what was said in the hearings versus information that WMATA has, staff has been given to the board. And so they want to do more questioning, more talking, because the information and the numbers that they're being presented by WMATA staff aren't adding up to what they heard in the hearings. So, an interesting, and I think it's communication that might be useful to this group, myself, and other my group wants to get a hold of it too.
Well, I'm going to ask that you maybe can keep us in the loop with what's going on with that conversation, and we're aware of what's happening. James, and then Ben.
Madam Chair, I was in high school meeting also, and I was really impressed by the access members and how they talked about the issues that they had. Please understand, I'm kind of removed from Metro Access because I don't use it or have no means of using it, at least right now in my life. That may change if we... Yeah. Okay, as that may hope of using Metro Access, I was very impressed with the testimonies, with the stories, and it sort of opened my eyes to sort of a new phase, for lack of a better term, to people who are actually using that truck. And I was very impressed.
All right,
Ben? I think one thing that I didn't learn from the hearings was what the Metro board members were thinking. They all sort of stood there, took it, stone-faced, but, you know, maybe smiled every once in a while, but at the end of the hearing, in a way, I kind of expected them to say, we hear you and this is what I've learned or something like that, but there was none of that. And as the sort of, as the budget working group starts to work on their thing, I think it would be useful for us to get a sense of what the board members were thinking and what direction they're leaning, even if it's just, you know, gossip or sort of an initial thought. I'd be interested in hearing that.
I assume that particularly the budget committee is aware of the survey that's online, WMATA.com/budget.
Yep.
Okay. Rather technical, I know, and fairly long, but lots to it. So I would think that would be something that, as members of RAC, that we would want to get in and start looking at and fill out and make sure that everyone had access to that. They did extend the date, by the way, to the 21st of March from the 12th to the 15th, because there were some accessibility issues with the survey, which we helped them work out. So it did get extended, but it's pretty comprehensive.
So, John, do you think you can send us an email with a link to that survey?
Certainly.
I remember seeing it now. Thanks, Ron, and then Ben.
Well, just to follow up, would we ever have the results of that survey? Because I'm just wondering, again, as we're trying to craft a public recommendation, it would be interesting to have the results of what the public has told Metro.
That's a good question. While my office, while the board secretary's office handles the hearing part of it, I don't know about the survey, so the answer I can give right now is I can ask.
Okay, Ron, and then Becky.
Obviously, in reading the summaries, there was no great surprise that half the people said that there were no fare increase about better service, and the other said we can't have better service unless we have a fare increase. But there was one suggestion in the summary that really caught my attention, because it strikes me as a way for WMATA to get a little public pressure going here on the jurisdictions that have to fund it. And that is, somebody had suggested that for every dollar of fare increase, that the jurisdictions have to increase their subsidy by a dollar And what I was thinking is maybe you could take a change on that and say, just to put a little public pressure on other jurisdictions, and provided to say something like, we will only implement half of the fare increase if the jurisdictions pay dollar for the other half of the increase. Because it just strikes me that that's a major problem, that they don't have any pressure on these jurisdictions very much to increase it. And that would mean that all these people who are concerned about the increase in the fare might put pressure on their local political organization. This was an idea that struck me that made a lot of sense.
Maybe that's something that I should read and look at further. Debbie?
One negative is that people cannot do the talk of folk about the fare. They don't talk about stuff, but they don't talk about just the last month, and I felt it was a little bit of voice of time, and we were off the point. I thought we were going there to talk about the budget alone, but we were talking about something else. John was there, I'm famous with John was there. And of the conference, we have three other people participating in sharing their thoughts. That's one flag, one negative. But I want to thank John for their coverage. They were doing a great thing. And I know that too. I've noticed that people use almost any opportunity they can when they interface with my board members or say executives to not necessarily talk about whatever that meeting topic is, but any other concerns they have. And that's something that maybe hopefully WMATA will recognize. Maybe work on just having general town halls, or work on improving the way they receive information and feedback from their regular riders. So do you have any other comments on this before we move on to the RAC budget committee update? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to... Oh, sorry, yes, go ahead.
I don't really like using my guy, I have a loud voice.
But it's for the...
What was I going to say? And I'm forgetting. You had said something, and I mean, well, I just want to give Mary Hines credit. Maybe because she's a fellow Arlington coming in. But at the Arlington meeting, she did actually close and tell everyone. And I know what you mean. They all sat there, kind of like this. And then Charles was just kind of sitting like this. I guess if you prefer it somewhere else. But she did not and seemed very engaged. And to tell everyone at the end, thank you very much. We will be taking all this into consideration. This means a lot. She was taking notes the whole time. So I just wanted to say that I felt that she was listening, if anyone. Thanks. So now we're going to go on to the RAC Budget Committee meeting update. And Carl, anything for us?
Yes. So we had our first meeting on Monday. And if you turn to page 47 of 52, you'll see what we discussed. The current budget proposal only requires $66 million in fare increases or new revenue. The shortfall is actually in the $110 million range. Is that right, John?
Yes, it's somewhere between, I want to say it's 110 or 120. Passenger fares are being asked to cover about 66%, or I'm sorry, $66 million. And then I think they're asking for $55 million from the jurisdictions. So if I were better at doing math, that would be somewhere around $120 million maybe? 121?
Right.
Okay.
So the jurisdictions are already under the current plan being asked to contribute a big chunk of money, which I don't know what's going into this. So what the working group did, which was Joseph, myself, Lorraine, and Dom,
and Chris,
Ms. Carroll, what we did was we went through all the different proposals and talked about their merits. And we tried to, more than picking things to specifically say we want, we tried more, I think, to find things we don't want and eliminate those from kind of the docket, so to speak. And we're interested in your feedback on those recommendations. You can see the column BWG review, where we kind of, we parsed out things that we think direct could be inclined to support versus things that were definitely off the table, and then things where we can move on consensus or we're unsure. So I'm not sure if it would be productive to walk through these all one by one, but would it be? We can. Just briefly going through these, when we were looking at the different options, we didn't really touch the stuff that was very small dollar, because at the end of the day, you get $66 million, you can't get there by buying things that are $1.2 million and $3.4 million, that sort of thing. So we tried to only really focus on the big ticket items and pick which of those, so the things that are like $5 or $6 million and over, we thought could be palatable to writers.
Is there anything on this list that maybe at the meeting on Monday folks had discussed more than others or found confusing that maybe we can number six?
I think that two things we spent a lot of time. The first was the fee surcharge. Getting rid of it requires us to get an additional $12 million.
That's number two.
So that would be lost revenue, obviously. So that results in a bigger gap to fill, so it would be 70 instead of 66. So that we discussed that quite a bit, and we kind of didn't, that was, I think everyone was a little uncertain on where we should come down on that. There was both hesitation with giving up a source of revenue that is already being collected and appears to be accepted by people, whether they like it or not, you know, being accepted, it resulted in widespread diversion of people from rush hour, which some of argue is the point of policy behind PPP, but it's still collecting the money, right? And the other side of that is, you know, it's not doing what it was intended to do, which was spread people out and allow for some more capacity in rush hour. So we spent a lot of time on that, and then we also went a lot back and forth on the Metro Rail off peak. That's right. Correct?
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
So number six and number seven. Off-peak did not get, correct me if I'm wrong, off-peak did not get raised more than CPI last round, while everything else did.
The increases, the past couple of fare hikes, the increases in off-peak fares have been, I believe, smaller than the increases in peak.
And bus, right?
I believe so. I'd have to do some research on that.
So the two proposals that the board has proposed, and these are fairly large, one of them basically get rid of peak off-peak by setting off-peak fares at 90% of peak, which, you know, is only 10% less than what you're paying normally during your trip. And the committee or the working group kind of came to the conclusion that they needed like that at all. So, but the one that garnered a little more debate was setting off peak at 75% of peak, rather than it would be on dime increments, John, or nickel?
Nickel, I believe.
So right now you have, John, can you maybe just explain that?
The short three tier.
Right now, our off-peak fares are calculated in three tiers. If you go from 0 to 7 miles, you pay, I think it's $1.60. If you go from 7 to 10 miles, you pay $2.15. And then if you go above, greater than 10 miles, you pay $2.75. So you pay in sort of three big steps. This would flatten it out so that you would get a per mile charge that would be 75% of the per mile charge that you pay during rush hour. So instead of three big steps, while you'd still be paying more, it would be more gradual.
We have about 5 minutes left. Is there anything else you can take?
I think we should take off.
Okay.
But I have one more. Yeah. No, was David there?
Well, David, was that there?
Go ahead. No, no, no.
Okay.
No, no, I want to. Thanks. I have a couple of questions, but I guess I'll try and not ask too many. What was the reason for not wanting to increase the max fare? Because that went up last time. I mean, that did not go up last time. The max fare was not increased. So people at maximum distances are paying less per mile.
I thought we got rid of 5, but we kept 4. Am I remembering wrong?
I thought that there was agreement that if the max fare went up by the same rate as that same CPI level of 5.7%, which would, I guess, raise it to 530 rather than 575, that was supported. I could have written down something wrong. That's.
I think that's right, because John raised one point that was, you know, you're starting to create north of far north of $10 for a max fare round trip every day. Or see if I remember making that point. And I think it was a hesitation with people already asking people to shoulder a CPI increase. We should keep it. We should not increase the max. Plus, increasing the max doesn't really bring in that much above what the CPI to 530. I mean, $2.2 million. We can get that from parking something else. Not to belittle $2.2 million, but I think our focus was on kind of the larger dollar amounts.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you guys thought about it, you know, for a lot longer. It seems that if we're saying that off-peak fares can go up more than CPI, given that they didn't go up as much last time and so on, that, you know, basically, we potentially have sort of two types of systems that are in one. It's sort of, you know, urban subway, and especially DC Arlington and Alexandria, you know, Inner Montgomery, you know, they maybe people ride for, you know, frequent off-peak, nighttime, et cetera, trips, a lot of little trips, and then this kind of longer distance commuter rail. And it's a matter of balancing the two. If you have a significant increase in the kind of short trip world and then not a larger increase in the long distance world, and given that last time there was also a larger increase in the short distance world and in the long distance world, that maybe seems a little bit.
Let me also remind everyone that because of the time we have left tonight, don't forget you can always email Carl or Joseph.
Committee is going to meet again March 19th. Or come on Monday. So, Debbie, Chris, Ben, and Pat, can you keep your question or comments? Yeah. Just like you said, your estimated work. My question is, have you thought about raising the property fee during the weekend? Keep people now arrive, but that's a wrong thing. Another thing, if you look at the legal proposal to the board meeting,
these proposals are all ones that were in the docket, which are the only ones we can consider and that are on the table. And they're all the max threshold. That is to say, for instance, it says parking, increased parking by 25%. 25 cents, excuse me. We could instead increase it 10 cents, and that would be allowed, but anything more. So these are all max, right?
Chris?
I wanted to ask David about, because I remember his comments about advocacy for Pico Peak, which I think, while not shifting large amounts of ridership, is a good idea. Do you think that Pico Peak was good?
I think I was in the camp of what Carl was trying to do before, you know, he was okay with me, it's more shifting. So, you know, decreasing it but increasing peak fares would seem sensible. Though, looking at it now, you know, they're only increasing peak fares by CPI, and then we're decreasing, you know, peak. So, and again, this would make this more favorable for peak and more unfavorable for off-peak, which makes me nervous. You know, as a result, I might have rather than have an option that would increase peak rate more, but decrease peak and peak or something like that.
One thing that we discussed was some folks had mentioned that they wish an increase to peak was on the docket, because that might bring in more revenue and also cheaper hospitals.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. One of the other thing that some people have said is that the Pico Peak was too big, that it was too wide of a time period. So one thing that I guess wouldn't violate the docket would be to shrink it down to 1 hour as it originally suggested. So one of the issues with that was that if you stagger it, so like if someone gets on Jane Grove, you know, before the Pico Peak starts, then like they're like at the end of the Pico Peak, or you know, well into about the time they get to, you know, downtown. So like this at, you know, fair, so I knew that maybe it would kind of be a role in the window, but that was kind of clear and copy on the CR cards explaining to people like at this station is 501, you know.
Three quick points on that in 30 seconds. What I heard from people at the hearings, there was a lot of concern about equity, and I think bus fares in particular are a big part of that. People see buses as the low-cost alternative to rail. So for my money, I would not support 11 and 12 and replace that with number 6, increasing the off-peak fare for the Metro Rail. That earns enough money to pay for 11 and 12 to not increase the bus fares, and I think that's something that maybe the RAC should think about.
Rail already charges around. Rail already kind of subsidizes the bus, and so to continue an increase in rail and not an increase in bus, rail bus is already being subsidized by rail, but the bus is not. It's not carrying totally.
Economically, it makes sense. I totally agree. But in terms of the sort of social equity point, people who ride the bus have to ride the bus.
Right.
People who ride rail more often than not can choose to ride rail. So I think that's the difference.
That I hate the social equity.
Yeah. The other thing I'd like to say is the short trip pass, especially the 28-day, which should be 1 month instead of 28 days. One of the key parts of that is that you will not be able to use smart benefits for that. And that's going to basically kill that whole program before it even starts. So I think this is something that the RAC should definitely mention in its report, that if they're going to go for that option, they have to have it work with smart benefits. And from what they told me at the hearings, it's all about a coding issue. It's a technical thing. It's not a policy thing. So that's something that can be overcome.
Ben, I'm just on that point, you did not, I don't know that CDC, the recommendation there at the
yet. Sure. I'm just saying, when you do get to that, I think that's a key point. And then just one other sort of overall point is that we're assuming that the split between the jurisdictions and the riders on fare increases is what we want. And I would just ask people to think about the possibility that the underlying structure of this may be faulty. Again, coming back to what Ron was saying about the dollar-for-dollar option, I think we have to look at the broader scope of is the structure we're operating under also perhaps faulty?
And then the last point to bring you in, I'll let you do it.
I might have said something different. We talked about that, and I think from my perspective, you know, we've asked the jurisdictions to show the vulnerable version every year, and it's not like they don't have budget crises themselves, and it's not like they don't provide an important service themselves. And I'm saying they should give you more of the hand to alleviate their instances, but we had a discussion at the work group about, you know, it's at some point it becomes irresponsible to say jurisdictions cover everything and then everyone gets mad at the jurisdiction for not having any money, and it's putting them into a pinch on other services they offer helping on Metro. So I think it is a balance.
I mean, in a perfect world, the jurisdictions would then pass that fare increase along to everybody equally through a tax increase. We know that that might not necessarily be the case in our current environment, but that's not something that we should prejudge, is what I'm saying.
I guess my question, though, was when we're talking about prejudge, are you concerned that jurisdictions may not meet what they have been asked to meet? Is that your concern?
No, I'm just saying that we as a RAC could ask the jurisdictions to shoulder more of the burden than they have. I'm not saying necessarily all of the burden. Some of it should probably fall on riders, but we, by looking at this as the board has presented it, we were making the assumption that
there's $11 million difference.
Right, that what the jurisdictions have done, that's all they can do and all they should be asked to do, and I don't think that's correct.
So this is a great conversation. I think we might that we only have one interpreter tonight, and so we still have other things to cover. So we need to end on time or close to one time. So I'm going to ask that Pat give us the last comment for this topic.
Thank you. I'll make one brief. The Metro Acts, our Fair Policy Work Group, according to my committees, made a number of recommendations concerning the Metro Access. And we'd like to be able to share those with you. I don't have my board report with me here tonight, but there we do have quite a few recommendations that basically indicate that we're looking for a flat fare for Metro Access as opposed to the variable fare now and how it's computed. Our 327,000 combinations of fares that people get who ride Metro Access. So we have a lot of technical information like that we can have to share. Also concerning the use of cash on buses and the use of the cards, not smarter cards, but the paper fare cards on buses, and what that does to a low-income population. So we have recommendations and motions that we pass on to the board. I think it would be good for you guys to be able to look at that. When will we meet? The 19th?
This coming Monday will be the next meeting. We were anticipating probably an additional meeting after that if needed. But I think we'd love to see your recommendations.
Certainly, I'll get those to you. And where will that meeting again?
It'll be here.
Here. Either in this room or across the lobby in the training room.
Because we have, we have our meeting here from 4-6, Metro Access.
Okay.
Right, John, I think.
And what did you? What was this week?
This week, bus rail.
Okay. Because I knew I couldn't use this room this week because of some AAC meeting, but I wasn't sure which.
And then we usually run 4-6, but sometimes we run over, so but okay. We should be out by 6:30.
All right, we'll probably meet across the hall.
Right, okay.
And one other thing that I just want to mention that I think warrants mentioning, I guess, is that Metro will be, I'm looking at John so he can make me give you the cutoff time, I'm not supposed to be saying this, but Metro is going to be rolling out smart trip machines at all stations, or expects to do so in the coming months.
One of the conditions of the crazy fare card proposals,
8, 9, and 10.
Yeah, the $4, $6, that stuff. One of the conditions was that before they implement those, which would occur around the Labor Day timeframe, was that Metro would have smart trip card vending machines in all rail stations, not just those with parking. And they've said that publicly, so you know, and that's, which is where I've heard it, so.
And I'll see you all in.
So I just want to remind everyone that this will come back to the council in April. We'll probably at that time vote on a letter, hopefully, for that's been sent around beforehand. So check your emails. If you've got any comments, send those to Carl or John or attend the meeting. One will be definitely probably March 19th. Look for an email announcing that, maybe another one soon afterwards. So the next agenda item is community events. The first is the Edgewood Parish Community Meeting. I attended that one, as did John. John, do you want to give a quick recap or no?
Well, Linda, who actually came and gave public comment tonight, asked us to come and talk to the community mostly about bus issues. Some folks, two of our bus planners came. Two. Two folks from our bus planning staff came. We got, I don't know, there were about a dozen or 15 people there, I think, from the community. It's a senior citizen building over in Northeast near the Rhode Island Avenue Metro. And I think we had a good discussion, both about bus service, about smart trip cards, about services for seniors. I know that there's been some follow-up in terms of, both in terms of bus service, about some concerns that members of the community had regarding, bus operators enforcing priority seat rules, pulling up and letting people board, which is especially important for senior citizens at the beginning of a trip, rather than pulling up right when the bus is leaving, some discussion about how to get people senior smart trip cards and the resources that Metro has available for senior citizens or people with disabilities. I know that someone from our Office of ADA Programs is going out, well, they've been in touch. The person from our Office of ADA Programs has been in touch with the program manager out at Edgewood Terrace. And I know that they're planning on some bus travel training events and I think some senior smart trip card events for people in the community. So.
Yeah, thanks, John. That's also what I heard. I heard communication is a big concern. Bus etiquette, there are a lot of children who may not or just do not respect the seniors on the bus as they should in the metro access. The second public hearing or community event that the rest of the party was the Ward 7 Transportation Summit. I attended that. There were about 50 residents there. DC Councilmember Wells, DC Councilmember Bowser was there, with them, as well as Lamada, Wawa, and DI. And the summit actually talked about all transportation. I just want to quickly highlight what happened in regards to Lamada. There were a lot of comments about Lamada. What struck me is that the comments were actually more to be low-hanging fruit. There was no big ideal picture about wanting a bus to take me directly to my destination. It was, I just want the bus to come on time. I want the bus to be able to accommodate the number of people that are at the bus stops. But one particular comment that struck me, and I asked John to include it on page 49 and 52, there was a young man, maybe he's in high school, that presented, and he presented for on behalf of the Mayor's Youth Leadership Institute. And he actually presented a very, I thought, well-thought-out proposal. They list some of their safety and cost issues that they have with Metro, what the problem is, and proposed recommendations. One of the recommendations that this Youth Leadership Institute would like to see is the establishment of a Youth Advisory Council here at Lamada. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on that, partly because, even though I may look like I could be a high school student, I'm really not a high school student, so I don't know. I believe I know what can be done to address some of the issues that we may have with the youth, but I feel like if you have the youth come to us saying they'd like to have this council, we should properly vet that and investigate that issue. I also want to mention, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe when the RAC first started, there was a young man who was actually a high school student that served on the RAC. Was that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Ralph Kittums' son.
Okay. And so I don't know if when we can discuss this, is there a need to establish a youth advisory council, or is there perhaps a need to press the board to place one or two members of this council to ensure that they're from a school district or a school member or a principal or something?
I actually think that I think I read through this and I also read some of the wrong ones. Well, and I think it's a great idea and I think that it's something that will not happen unless we help make it happen, the board, after the board members express support for the council, but then after that, we're done, they made an idea. And so, I think that is a good idea. I think that creating their own council so that they will have the free ability to create a plan or talk about issues that speak to young people in particular, and then maybe offer them a representative on this council is, would be a better idea to me than two or three people, young people on this council where the voices can be drawn out and their issues don't take priority with what are other favorite issues. And so I would support that idea. I also think that it's something that, you support and the rest of the body support, that I would love if we got behind, we help create a plan, draft a plan, approve a plan, and ask the board to officially charter the organization. Because I think that unless we're actually pushing it, there's not going to happen. It's just going to continue to happen.
So we've got three comments. I've got James, and then David, and then Debbie.
Madam Chair, my comment is this. First of all, let me say nobody supports the youth more than I do. I'm a strong believer in young people being involved in the process. The Youth Advisory Council, I would approach with caution, because you're dealing with young people. Dealing with the young people who do have issues with Metro, but they may not understand why these issues are taking place or what's really going on or the logistics or, you know, what is going on with Metro. And even they may not understand what Metro is other than just the rail and the bus, and it's a lot more than that. I would go as far as to say maybe a youth member of the Metro board, I would go that far. I would even, of course, have youth members of the Riders Advisory Council, youth members, but a youth advisory council, I hesitate to support that because I think, I understand what Joe is saying and I agree with him if it's not pushed on this side, but they have to push also on it. And that's really where my unreadiness is. Are they really going to push for it? That's what it is.
I hear you, and it may be something where it's down on a pilot basis. If this is in, you know, D.C., which we know there are more youth to take the Metro than in D.C., maybe it's a pilot down between D.C. government. And that's something that I think we can discuss, but I think you bring up some really good points about to be careful about what exactly we propose or we support. So who was next? I think it was David, Debbie, and Tara.
Yeah, I think it's great for these to have a voice. I'm kind of undecided on specifics of the proposal I can see on the side. It seems that the key value, especially sort of trying to what Ben was saying with the hearings, you know, is to get, make sure that there's opportunities for the board members to be hearing from youth. So, you know, certainly if there's a council and they agree to have youth, you know, speak at the board meeting and then, you know, board members came to the youth, you know, that would do it. Though, you know, I tend to wonder a little bit, like, are there more direct ways to just get youth talking to the board members? Because as it is, like, we spend a bunch of time talking and some board members, I don't think, have ever been here. And, you know, the chair gives a presentation, but usually it's very short and the board members, like, thank you very much, and they want to get on the agenda. So they're not exactly engaging in a large dialogue with us. You know, we can sort of speak up for ourselves and so forth, but, you know, maybe a pilot step would be to, you know, push all the board members to have some youth town halls or, you know, identify some youth leaders and have them meet with them, and that could turn into a council if over time those people feel like, you know, there is something that comes out of it. But being clear to the board, I guess I'm saying that, like, the goal of having it isn't to just say, okay, we did that, now we're going to listen to you, but the opposite. It's got to be a way for them to listen to us.
Okay. Debbie?
I think it's a good way to start a council for the students. They if you're going to set up a council, you really think about having a dog chaperone. A dog chaperone. Maybe even a dog chaperone from DC Public School or from other school districts. I mean, from other counties, like Smoke Home, maybe St. George's, maybe Fairfax County schools together. And also, I would like to remind you of including some of the children from Martha Secondary School for the Gaffney and Marshall.
Okay, Tara. don't so much play games though. Maybe if we reach out to different high schools or middle schools and have them create their own, like put it out into the school and see how many students are interested in creating their own little group. And that, I can't remember, it's been so long since I've been to class, I can't remember. Let me say the club, thank you. Create their own club, and then we can have the president of the club from a different school be able to come and sit in and speak here, and then go back and report back to what's going on. But yeah, I think it's a great idea. Did the student create this here? That's amazing. And I think it would stick more together to their fellow young people if it was brought to them by another young person. I think it would be very beneficial to everyone. So what I hear is that the RAC does want to support the youth and the youth addressing their issues that they may have with WMATA. I do hear some disagreement, rightfully so, or I guess a request to further explore how the RAC should be involved in this. And so Joseph has actually graciously volunteered to lead this effort. So I'm thinking that, I don't know if I'm going to call this a working group just yet. I guess we'll figure that out offline. If this needs to be a working group, or if it needs to be more of a pathfinding mission, first finding out from the students or what they think they need from WMATA, what they think they need, and then from the schools themselves, the administrators, what they think they need, and then what can the RAC actually do, and what can we help make happen as soon as possible.
Okay, can I just say, this is not new. They have been talking about this for a while. They're the new city council in D.C., they're the mayor of D.C., they talk about this for years and on that body. And Prince George's County, there's a new council, and then there's a regional association of student government that have talked about this for years. I don't know if Prince George really heard about it. But, so they have been talking about this. And I hear the concerns, and I think these are very real concerns that people have. So what I'll do, if this is a benefit to you all, is have conversations with leaders of those groups and see what they think. They may not want a council. They may just want what they have in D.C. where the mayor, not the mayor, the city council holds monthly town halls with young people, and they all go to and they all talk to and the city council chair is there. They may not want it. They may, but I think giving them some type of support, some type of natural infrastructure support, is what they need, because asking young people to plan something that is regional and not just their neighborhood sets them up for failure. And then the last thing that I want to say is that some of the concerns that I hear, I just think that we should take a step back and remember that a lot of those concerns that we're saying now is what some board members, some opinion writers said about our group before it was created. That members of the public will never understand how the budget works. They will never know the intricacies of how Metro works. And so getting the members of the public involved in Metro is to set you up for them not knowing and not understanding. And so I think that sometimes it's important for us to be able to take a step back and realize that that's what was said about us. And I think that we've done a very good job in showing them wrong. And that's probably because I'm just as much when I work with young people today. So.
Thanks, Joseph. So if you can come back to us, you know, maybe as soon as possible, we'll talk and get further input from everyone.
I'm sorry, if I just want to add in also, what was I going to say? Metro isn't the only transit agency. I mean, it's not like we're starting from scratch. I know when you brought this up, actually, SEPTA in Philadelphia they have three advisory councils. They have a citizens advisory council, I'm not sure what the term, but a senior and disabled advisory council, like our AAC, and they have a youth advisory council. And I'm sure that there are other transit agencies that are as well. So I will help Joseph at least find information on that. That, you know, we think we're unique, but we're not always.
Right. So are there any opportunity events coming up before our April meeting that you want to let other RAC members know about? Maybe we can attend or at least the public know that they are missing a statement, and then Chris, Joseph.
Tomorrow night, there's a 6 to 8 o'clock in Silver Spring near the Metro Rail Station in Wheaton, actually, the hearing on the Y-Bus. I'm planning to attend, give some feedback. if anybody would be interested in that. Wide bus runs along Georgia Avenue and the service Montgomery Hospital.
Great. Carl and Ben?
I guess it's kind of a community event. Are we expected, is the board, is the council going to be asked to testify again during the budget hearing in the spring in the House and Senate related to the metro contribution for the
Not that I'm aware of. The times that the council was asked to testify in front of various House and Senate panels had to do with safety. And I think we're specifically, I guess, accident investigations. David, I know you were there, you testified at one of them. I think it was more focused on safety. It wasn't necessarily focused on the budget.
Ben and Joseph?
Yeah, I know that there's going to be a Metro's going to be presenting its results of the 14th Street Lines survey. These are all of the 50s buses. I went to one of the outreach sessions and all of that, and they're going to present the findings of that at the Reeves Center. I actually believe it's in April, but I can't remember the date, but I have it on my calendar. So if anyone's interested, just send me an email. Or it's also, I believe it's on the Metro website somewhere, but maybe not yet.
I will. I'll look, because in addition, Metro is doing a couple of bus corridor studies. One on the Y line that Chris mentioned, one on the 14th Street line, and then another on the F4 and F6 line, which runs between Silver Spring and New Carrollton, sort of across northern Prince George's County. And they're having two community meetings next week. So I will send, there's a sort of a central place for that, so I'll send out information to everyone on those three.
Okay, Joseph and David.
The first one, Chris, the other thing that I wanted to mention for the members from Prince George's County, which the Prince George's County Transit Advocacy Group that has only like to invite members to speak at their meetings on the agenda twice, especially new black members to gain more of the information to go and talk to them a little bit about what's going on for that, what's their ideas, and come back and say that they've been really, I cannot remember the name right now, but I'll send that information to you, James, and
Dave, did you have a
I wanted to say something, like 10 seconds about what the previous
talk. Sure, go ahead.
I was going to say that sort of as I was thinking about it, and the discussion was going on, I sort of started to become more and more feeling like it makes sense to do to just support having the council, assuming that that's what the individuals want, because then there's not an opportunity for people to sort of come together and kind of figure out what they want, and so, you know, having this kind of a thing would probably make sense. So I think that's probably a good idea to support that.
Great. So our next agenda item is questions and comments on the RAC chair and AAC chair report. I'll go first. The RAC chair report, the delivery went really well at the February Vermont board meeting. We actually received three comments. One was from Mary Hines. She was looking forward to presenting to us, and she did tonight. The other comment was from the DC board member, Tom Downs. Mr. Downs wants the RAC to look at bus stops throughout the region and give recommendations on how to make stops more accessible and how Ramada might go about doing that. So I'm thinking you may possibly again have to establish a working group for me person on that. The other comment we received was from Tom Bolger. He wants board members to once again meet with the RAC members that are from that jurisdiction. So last year, DC board members met with DC RAC members, Maryland, Virginia. So he wants to. Virginia did not happen. That's right. So we've got to make sure Virginia happens. So those are three comments.
I was just wondering, John, I know that proposed meeting with Muro Bowser didn't happen, and I'm wondering, has it been rescheduled?
No, we are still waiting on we were hoping for a date with Ms. Bowser's office that we have not heard back from them on, so we're going to, I think, try for a little further out in the future when additional DC board members can participate.
Okay.
Sort of try and hate the phrase, but, you know, kill a lot of birds with one stone.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I owe the RAC, which I will get to you in the board report, which there were a few edits that were being put in, so hopefully I make that to you this week, if not this week, next week. One of the things that did come up though, having to do with the bus stops, survey, AAC has been working on that for about 4 or 5 years. So I, wanted to know if the RAC would be interested in looking at some of the data that we have and some of the progress that's been made. I think that's important to both groups to be looking at the same data from the jurisdictions. I think there's been some progress made in some areas. I know that we focused a little bit last month on Prince George's County, who hasn't really done much, but then we learned that there's a, I think it was $800,000 grant that they're going to receive to help jumpstart the work in Prince George's County. So I think that there's a lot of data out there that certainly a working group established by the RAC, and we can share that information from the AAC so we have a coordinated strategy moving forward. I thought the board felt that that was a real good use of our resources, and they will, and this way they'll be able to get show some progress going forward, and that's good. We talked, as I was mentioned, also about the fair situation for metro access, and we're also working with respect to the new metro access contract, which I thought was going to be out in April, but it looks like they're going to release the RFP in June. So we still are working on comments, technical comments for the RFP. I will get you my report as soon as that's completed and signed and off the board. Questions for me?
So the next item is open mic, and I'm actually going to go ahead and start that. I have two comments or two topics that I want to bring up. The first is that I want to say I'm really proud of RAC and all that we're doing. I just wanted to give everyone an update. We've got the airport accessibility group that Ben is leading. We've got this bus stop accessibility that we're going to take on to address Tom Down's concern, and hopefully we'll get the data from Pat and the AAC to lead on that. We've got this youth issue now that we're dealing with, the Joseph will lead. We've got the budget that we're looking at that Carl is going to lead or is leading. And then in general, we're just looking at communication. So I want to let you know we're doing a lot. It might be piece by piece, but we're doing a lot. And our plate's getting pretty full, but I'm happy with it, and we've got a good team. The second item I wanted to bring up is a little bit more serious. We have two members that have not attended a meeting since they have been appointed. And John, I want to make sure I get their name correct. I know one is a Mr. Alvarez. He was a D.C. member, selected resident D.C. And then,
DeNicholas
was selected from Fairfax. And so, it's my understanding, John has called these individuals and emailed them and even dealt them packages, but has not received a response. And so, my concern is that we all applied to serve on the RAC, we're then interviewed and selected, and I think we all take this position very seriously. And it goes easier when we have a full council and not just a partial council. And so we've actually reached a point in our bylaws where we have a two-thirds vote, meaning about 14 people. The RAC can make a recommendation to the board that they terminate the membership of those RAC members that have not been for 3 consecutive meetings. And so we're at that point now, and I don't know if that's something that we vote on tonight. I'd actually just like your thoughts on it, or if it's something that we know is an option right now and we consider for next month.
Can I just,
yes,
just if it might change the tone of the conversation, there are 13 people here tonight, which is not, which is one short of the two-thirds required under the bylaws to take a vote. So, I have. I will let you know that I've maybe one out of every 10 or 15 emails I sent out, I've gotten a response from these people. So I know they're out there somewhere, but I've communicated by email. I mean, they're on, Lord knows I send you all enough emails, and they're all on this list. I have left phone messages that have not been returned, or phone numbers have been disconnected. I've sent the two new members, I sent orientation packages in the USPS mail. One of them came back with some kind of return to sender, you know, label. So, short of staking out their house, which I don't even know would work, I'm not sure how to get a hold of these people. So,
so we have three comments: Dave, Debbie, and then Lorraine.
The individuals are from Fairfax and what's the address?
District of Columbia.
Do we know if were they personally, did they meet personally with board members? I know some board members meet with all their interviewees. Do you know if that happened in these cases?
The gentleman from the District of Columbia, Lorda and I did a phone interview with him, actually. So I don't believe he's met with the board members. The member from Fairfax County was appointed, Mrs. Hudgens decided to do the selection process herself for among the applicants she received. I do not know how she went about her process.
So, I guess, the guidelines also don't require us to go through this process for members to be removed, the board could do it if they wanted.
I have the relevant section of the bylaws here if anybody right. wants to, if you want, if anybody, if it would help anyone.
So, you know, I don't know if you've spoken to these board members or board that has, you know, it made this sound like at least this is an opportunity to bring it to their attention. If they want to replace those individuals, the board can just do so on its own volition. If we wanted to, I'm not going to push strongly, but I'd probably vote yes. If someone wanted to do this, we could, you know, just sort of vote to ask the board to, you know, at least look into it and possibly replace them, you know, or something, or, you know, talk for the board to speak with you about it and consider replacing them if it means that individuals can't be reached or something like that. So there is an action we could take if we wanted.
If you have a quorum.
To ask the, yeah, to okay. say anything to the board yet.
So that's an option. Okay, let's hear from Debbie and then Lorraine.
Last thing, we have talked about one picking update in bylaws. I think there's nothing in the bylaws that says what if people don't attend to every week or miss more than 2 weeks. I don't see their reason in the bylaws. Also, we need to stay in contact with the county for the center. Like, I'm going to say that my supervisor was requesting one day, maybe the rent board members to stay in contact with county for the center.
Okay.
Virginia, Alexandria. We haven't actually gotten an official resignation from the person from Alexandria.
Well, we could technically, in that case, fall under the same situation that he has missed 3 meetings.
He hasn't missed
two, I think.
This would be number 2.
He was here in January?
I believe so.
He was.
So I need to follow up with him and specifically re-request that he needs to affirmatively resign. He told me he's resigning, but that doesn't, I mean, I hate to get all legalistic about it, but that doesn't count. You know, you have to resign to the board. So ideally that's a step. I don't think that's a problem.
Okay. Any other comments? I don't
see him on the attendance.
Then he's not
in the
attendance.
You don't? Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay.
Not to be the fact checker.
No, I.
As I have not shown up, but I wanted to say, John, I'm not sure if you remember, I sent you an email, I'm sure you get several emails, but I started taking a class that we done Wednesday, so I wasn't here last month, I took January, but anyways, I just want everyone to know. still want to be committed to this group. I sunk in a little nervous when you said that, I was like, uh-oh. But I just wanted to say that, but if I could be over today.
Okay.
We're coming for you now. No, this is an issue of showing up. People can have very substantive contributions to this council as they have in the past. If they are unable to attend meetings, but are able to attend whatever work groups and staying on and following the development. And if meetings were being missed, but we were still having any sort of contact with that, this would be a very different discussion, but that's not the case.
Joseph, and then I
want to make a motion.
You have a quorum.
We don't have a concern.
You need.
We have a quorum.
It's like we have to
attend. Yeah. You can take an action with 11 people to recommend somebody be removed, to send a recommendation to the board that someone be removed. Then you need the 2/3 here.
So I guess what I'm asking you to do is an act of letter to the board, asking them to look into this situation and expressing that these members have fallen out of communication with the council. That wouldn't be good.
Sure, and you know, you remind them. And when they have the power, you know, the person is not taking part in theirs.
I would ask to amend it with the phrase, the reason we are doing, we did not have a quorum to consider any other options at the March meeting. I mean, good point. Just so that they know that this isn't just us being.
Right.
This wasn't our default choice. We're not trying to pass the buck.
And I think we've never done this in the RAC's history. So, you know, we've mentioned this is fairly unusual, you know, that members don't even communicate with you.
Because we saw emails every week to make any comments on this before they vote. Okay, so open
mic
very quickly.
Just two quick things. One, I'm working with John on the airport access group. Things with all public meetings, some WMATA officials have been understandably quite busy in the last month, but we're working to set up the first meetings for that. So when that's ready, we'll send around an email to everybody. And then the second one is, I brought up in a previous meeting the possibility of doing sort of a monthly list of questions to WMATA that we could then expect answers for. And if possible, I'd like to sort of put forth a proposal maybe for the next RAC meeting about that we can talk about.
I'm fine with that. I think the idea is going to be over exception to see if we're not being open to bother.
Accessible
for people with disabilities or just accessible to the general public?
I would say I think it's both. When I first heard it, I thought accessible just to the general community because they need to see there are some less houses on the sidewalk.
Yeah, exactly.
But then there's also the truth is, I will still have accessibility issues from the standpoint of the AAC. So I think it's both.
Okay, thanks for talking.
Any other comments? Okay, so I'm going to call this meeting to a close. Thank you all so much.